All parties, the call is being recorded. Any objections to disconnect? Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. Barry, would you like a quick roll call?
Yes, please.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Barry Cobb, Mike O'Connor, James Bladel, Mike Rodenbach, and from staff we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, and Gisela Gruber-White, myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Gisela. And I think we're probably, I think we got most of this. I was hoping that we would get Greg Aaron on the call. He had said that he could make the 11 o'clock, but I never got a response from him for trying to make the 9 o'clock. And so we're missing him, and I think we're missing one other one, and Jeff Newman as well. Okay, so for today's session, basically I sent out kind of a small agenda yesterday along with an updated attachment of our research data. And generally, the agenda is just going to be talking about the research and really what our next steps are. At the close of our last call, there was some pretty extensive discussion about about the research and the data that we have to this point. Some sort of picture is emerging, but we need to understand where we should go from here. Before I kind of open it up in general, I'd like to just make a couple of comments about what I sent out yesterday. This next version of the spreadsheet or the research data, I tried to do a couple of different things. First and foremost is I tried at the first swipe of trying to make this look a little bit anonymous. I'll put in the caveat that it's not perfect because there's a couple of tabs in there that actually has agreement language pasted into the matrix. And so if use of a registrar name or any kind of language like that, I didn't filter that out, but across the column headings, across all of our different tabs, I tried using a first take at a numbering scheme so that we can still try to uniquely classify a registrar without giving away their name. And we're certainly, you know, open up for discussion and for any other ways that we can make this anonymous, so to speak, if we choose to even go forward with this data. The second point that I'd like to bring up is that I also tried to pare down on some of the reporting tabs just what was in scope for registration abuse policy. So hopefully what I had tagged as other elements of the agreement that really were outside of the scope of RAP, hopefully removing or filtering those out of the view will help us in terms of trying to gain a picture about dispersion here. And then the last thing that I'd like to say is, you know, from our last session, I don't know that I probably did all of that good of a job of explaining how to, I guess, read the spreadsheet, so to speak. So what I was hoping I could do is maybe just walk through a couple of quick examples so you kind of get an idea of why I did what I did. Because this is all really in the nature of the issue around comparisons. And in terms of developing, you know, some sort of picture about dispersion, I still had to flip the binary bit, so to speak, you know, a 1 if they've got it, a 0 if they don't really have it, or a blank if there's nothing there at all. But what it's really allowing to do, you know, if you can kind of look past some of the comparisons and those kinds of things, I'd like to draw attention over to the far right columns that kind of summarize or quantify total and then compare it a tag versus the sampling of data, and I'll get into that example in a minute. So for everybody, I'm looking at the spreadsheet yesterday with the file title of UFC_ANON, which is short for anonymous, and then yesterday's timestamp. And specifically, I'm on the second tab, which is titled as the registrar summary by rank. So as you're looking at this particular spreadsheet or this particular tab, I think it's the view percentage is around 60%. And so if you kind of blur your eyes, again, you can kind of get a quick visual representation that, you know, all of these green boxes is some sort of hit relative to an abuse provision. A lighter green box means that it was probably covered in a separate document, or that if it's just blank yellow, that there was nothing that could be found. So what I would like to emphasize on is that when you're looking at this view, there are four rows that are a deeper blue, not a midnight blue, but a darker blue. The first three of them is what I consider like the inventory tag section out of the agreements that, you know, we found from each registrar's site. So section number one is typically what the registrar had on their site that was the registrar-registrant agreement, all of which go by different various titles of the document. Some call them domain registration agreement. Others call them just terms of service. Others call it registrant agreement. At any rate, it seemed I tried to acquire the primary document that most represented the registrar-registrant agreement. So that's section one. And each one of the flags, for instance, column or rows 6 through 14, as they're labeled, the first one being UDRP, second one being termination of service, the third one restriction of service and takedown, and so forth. These subsections are actual sections that were found in the contract. So one thing that was certainly consistent across every one of the 22 registrar agreements that I looked at is that each agreement was sectioned out. Section 1, general terms. Section 2 would be UDRP resolution process. Section 3 is what they do for conduct and use. Section 4 is contact information. And so what I mean by a formalized section is that they specifically call out that section and titled it. And that is what I inventoried here. So as an example, for James, I'm just going to continue using GoDaddy for sake of ease, is that within one section of their document, they specifically called out the uniform dispute resolution process and talked about all of their specific language and attributes about that, and reference to the UDRP on the ICANN site and any special things that GoDaddy does. And so I flipped the bit one. Yes, GoDaddy has the UDRP section. So to kind of to further define that, column N, Germany, R6, I could not find a specific called out section talking about UDRP, nor did in my scan of that agreement did I find any language embedded in any other kind of section that really talked about UDRP. So that's why it was blank. So my point here is that these defined RAP sections that I have listed here, I was really inventorying a primary called out section of the agreement. So I will put forth and state that, you know, at this point, I haven't read through every single line of every agreement, and if, for instance, one registrar talked about UDRP, but it was in the, just as a poor example, in the expiration section or something, I probably didn't catch that, or I didn't catch line item sentences about a specific provision. So again, I was only looking at formalized sections. And that applies to the registration agreement Tier 1, other agreements Tier 2, and other agreements Tier 3. So again, I'm only looking at inventorying formalized section as drawn out in the agreements. the last section, which is labeled as RAP work group abuse types, what you'll find there is none of those tags, if you will, have the one tag. Meaning, so really what I did here is after I kind of inventoried each agreement by section, I then went through the agreement and did a find, a search find on different types of buzzwords. So, for example, I would search for cyber squatting, or I would search for malware, or I would search for the word spam, search for the word phishing, and those kinds of things. If I found a hit on that search of that document, then that's how the lighter green zero would pop up. And so it is, to a certain degree, a little bit more line item specific as opposed to a particular section. But as an example, if I found, if I searched for spam and I found a couple of sentences about their spam policy embedded in a section of, let's say it was just general information, in the master matrix, I would flag that as a zero or tag it, and then I would look at trying to identify what section where that language was. So I hope I made sense in a little of that, and now I'm just going to quickly run through just a couple of quick examples so that I'm hoping that I can show you guys hopefully a little bit of the value of what we're able to get out of this.
Hey, Barry, before you do that, it's Mike. Can I ask you a question?
Please.
And I'm sorry if I missed this. My daughter came in for a moment. But did you explain what the pink and green speckled shading means?
So like in the second section, other agreements, tier two, if it's a speckled color across the entire column, that meant that there was no second document reviewed in that tier two. So as an example, column J, R4, they had a primary service agreement. I reviewed that. They didn't seem to have any, like, universal terms of service agreement or anything else. But then looking at Tier 3, they did have an acceptable use policy document. And so that's kind of how I broke it out in that regard. So just to answer your question, the speckles mean that there was no document reviewed. And thank you for that. I'll add that to the legend on the title page. Okay, so that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks, Barry.
Okay, cool. In terms of just a quick example, let's go back to the top left, and what I think turns out to be a good one, which was a quick point of contention from our last call, is the line item of spam, which is row 12. And what we got here is when I started down this road, I started going from the top down in terms of registrar rank by the number of domains registered. And so when I look in terms of spam for formalized sections across this pool of 22, there were really only two registrars that specifically call out a formalized section relating to their spam policies or provisions that they have written in the agreement. And the only one that truly, in terms of what was considered the registrant agreement, there was only one registrar that did that, and that was R7. What became kind of a quick point of contention last week for James, and I do apologize because this was an oversight on my part, I didn't have a flag for spam for GoDaddy, and that was my bad, my mistake. And I went and re-reviewed the universal terms of service. And so, if you look down on row 54, spam is formally called out within their universal terms of service as a formalized section in that agreement. And so the dark green one flag is listed there, and as opposed to the first section where the spam flag is a zero light bar green, signifying that it was found in a different agreement. So anyway, my point is that in terms of spam being classified as a formalized section in any agreement, there are only two registrars out of the 22 that I came across that had that called out. And what I'd like you to do is scroll all the way to the right to columns AV, Alpha Victor, and Alpha Whiskey. And what I tried to do here is quantify, regardless of registrar, but quantify within the pool of 22 registrars, how many instances did we, or how many hits did we generate here. And so in the top registrant agreement, tier one level, there was only one registrar that did it, and it was 4.55% of the pool of 22. So now the second take on this is moving down to the last section, which is the RAPWG abuse types. And within the abuse types, for now, the working group, whether it has to deal with registration or abuse, is still being worked out. But right now we have it identified as an abuse provision or an abuse type. And so if you look at row 103, after I've searched the agreements, I also did a find within the agreements for spam. And what you'll see is that many of the registrars, 14 of them, or 63.64% of the registrars, had some sort of, they had the word instance of spam that usually led into two or three sentences, maybe one sentence that talks about the spam. And so you get a higher notion there. So basically what we can walk away, or the takeaway from the spam category, is that, you know, approximately 14 or 15 registrars out of our pool of 22, one way or another, addressed the issue of spam, whether it was either through a formalized section in the agreement or a sentence or two that was embedded in a different section of the agreement. So that's kind of where I was going down with this. And I'll just follow it up with a second example, and then we'll turn this over. The second example, and I'm hoping that this makes things a little bit more clear, is I'll be looking at row 10 for contact information. Now, something that was certainly very consistent, in my opinion, in reviewing many of these, is just about all of the, or a large majority of these agreements had a section in there talking about contact information, and the general premise is that, you know, when you get a domain, you will supply the contact information. This information is going to be posted to who is. It's your responsibility to maintain accurate information. Some even put in, you know, wording or provisions that you can't put false or misleading contact information in there, yada, yada, yada. So what we found out here through this is that in the primary registrant agreements, 14 out of 22 or 63% of them had some had a formalized section about how to handle contact information. And by my interpretation of them having that, that would kind of equate down in rows 94 and 95, where we talk about false who is or inappropriate use of who is as an abuse type. So I'm trying to make that correlation there that, you know, this registrar had this kind of language in the agreement, and can it, you know, does it directly state, you know, no false who is or no inappropriate use of who is? No, it doesn't, but it, in general terms, it says that you're supposed to provide accurate and timely contact information. So in my interpretation, that language or that provision was listed there to try to combat the issue of people not maintaining accurate information. So and just to wrap this up, that's kind of where I was going. So again, I want you to really be cognitive of the fact that the top three areas of these charts, again, are formalized sections. The last section is where we kind of start doing into getting into a word search mechanism on abuse type. And then, you know, and then after we figure out what to do with this, if anything, is, you know, do we go down to the next road of where we're reading every line by line of a contract and looking for every specific word that relates to an abuse type, et cetera, you know, which we'll figure out soon. So, again, the big three changes from the last version is tried to throw a bit of I can't say the word properly, but to make it anonymous, that, you know, the inventory is predominantly classified around formalized sections, and then just kind of further trying to update by going through some of the registrars and kind of rechecking my work. And that's what we have here. So in terms of the meeting for today, I think really a bunch of questions that we need to ask is, do we move forward with this? Is this research valuable to us? Did it give us the picture we need? Do we need to do more research, or do we need to scrub this and go back to the drawing board? And from that, I'll open it up to anybody, and we'll move on from there.
James?
Please, James.
I'll let Mike go first.
Okay, Mike.
All right, thanks. Barry, just, you know, awesome job again. Can't thank you enough. You've obviously put in a ton of work on this. I personally believe you should be done with this. If people want more, then they should do more. I just don't think we could ask you to do more than you've already done, personally. I think to answer your question of where we go from here, you've certainly documented that it's very clear that registrant agreements are not uniform. Of course, we knew that, but now you've just shown it in a way that's basically indisputable. So you asked the right question, you know, what do we do from here? And frankly, I think that's a bigger question beyond our subgroup. We could come back to the bigger working group with a recommendation, but ultimately that's something the entire working group is going to have to agree on. And I think maybe what we should do is create perhaps a range of options of what we could do on this issue. But I'll stop there for a second and let's hear what James has to say.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And again, Barry, it's pretty clear you've put a lot of work into this, and I commend your efforts. And I think, you know, we talked about this in previous calls as well, and I just want to be, I'm almost where Mike is as well, with just one qualifier, which is, you know, again, that we, as we, you know, discovered last time using the spam example with GoDaddy, is that you know, other registrars who currently are not showing a mark in the spam column may be calling it unsolicited bulk email or something. So it may be a little more obfuscated than just calling it out as spam, and that may be true of other categories as well. So I thought that, you know, rather than going on a scavenger hunt, and this is where I really do agree with Mike, but, you know, rather than this group going on a search to try and find those, is rather we would give these over to registrars and give them an opportunity to correct anything that maybe they think that they have covered in their various agreements, but that we're showing that they do not have covered, and you know, give them an opportunity to correct it and give them an opportunity to provide some evidence that their assertion that they have something is valid. And beyond that, then, yes, I think we should just take this back to the larger group and say we clearly have some, you know, there is no uniformity in contracts, at least on a certain scale. And I also wanted to point out, and I know that earlier on we were discussing, you know, whether we broke this down regionally or by market segment or by registrar size, et cetera, and for a different working group I did some statistics, and we take the top 20 GTLD registrars, you cover, I think it's 79.8% of all registrations. So I think that that's you've got a good number here with 22. You're definitely up to the Pareto distribution with that. So But that's all I wanted to say, and I just wanted to see if Mike was in agreement in that, just because we did uncover a couple of errors earlier with something not called exactly what we were searching for, giving registrars an opportunity to fill in some of these blanks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily necessary at this point anyway. For one thing, you know, we're not publicly distributing any registrar names. I think we could scrub through the text that Barry mentioned. There might still be some mentions. We could scrub through and fix that, I think, or perhaps, you know, even some administrative help could do that. I think it's the bigger issue is, you know, so what? You know, even if there are a couple errors in a few of the boxes, I mean, the point is clear, right, James, that certainly the contracts are quite disparate in their treatment of registration abuse. And so, you know, then that begs the question, well, should it be different? Should there be some, you know, minimum agreed text? And I think that these are issues that we need to talk about amongst the bigger working group, not just amongst us, although it will probably benefit the entire group if we can discuss it a bit and like I said, come to a range of potential options for next steps. But I don't think it's necessary to go to the registrar, each of the 22 registrars now, and ask them to do this. First of all, I think it's going to freak some of them out. They're going to think they were targeted for some reason when, you know, we're just trying to use examples. It's going to take them time, which, frankly, I don't know that we need. I don't think that this spreadsheet needs to be perfectly accurate.
Okay, well, I'm gonna change course a little bit because I think that I'm going to agree with you that since we have removed the names, probably less of a concern than it was for me with previous iterations of this sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that scrubbing the agreements of the actual names might not be enough. I would say, can we leave that tab out entirely?
Yeah, this is Barry. I was just going to suggest that, you know, we don't need to give them all. We don't need to give the working group all the details. What I can do is cut out the primary matrix that has all of the language from contracts and stuff. All we really need to be presenting is the summary report here that, you know, here's the 22 registrars of our pool, and this is kind of our summary findings. And then if I did that, then we remove any chance of any particular column being associated with a specific registrar, with the caveat, though, that I think if the right person looked at this and did their homework, they would probably start to figure out that, oh, this starting with the top five registrars, they could probably pick, oh, this one is probably Enom or this one is probably GoDaddy. It's not spelled out for them, but they could start to deduce that.
Well, Barry, that would require them to do as much work as you've done, so I'm not worried about that. As a concern, I don't feel that folks are really going to undertake that kind of an investigation. And I think that if we can leave out that particular tab and we maintain the anonymity behind these R1, R2, RN designations, that I'm okay with it.
This is Mikey.
Go for it.
Just to kind of further obfuscate the data, a couple of ideas. One would be to eliminate the names of the agreements. That would be a clue. And another would be to eliminate the country. So basically get it down to the point where we go to the larger group and say, this is a picture of the diversity or dispersion in the contracts, but we have intentionally made it as hard as we could get back to individual registrars in a region. Because, I think we're honing in on an agreement here that the picture that this paints, the 50% magnification bird's eye view, is very helpful and needs to go to the larger group. And at the same time, we need to make every effort that we can to preserve anonymity. That, I think we're all good.
Mikey, this is James, and I just want to go ahead and go on the record that I think it's okay to leave the country in there, and in fact, if we see any other patterns relative to jurisdictions, I think that might be helpful.
If you're okay with it, James, I'm certainly okay as well. You're the one that's been the best and most consistent advocate on this, so I'd certainly defer to what you...
Yeah, I appreciate that. Initially I was thinking, well, what if we, just blew it up to different regions, North America, Europe, whatever. But now I'm thinking that, if there's any, jurisdictional patterns, we probably would want to see that, so we probably should preserve the country name.
Yeah, and James, I think as well, to Mikey's point about further trying to maintain the anonymity of this, is I'll remove the language of registrar summary by rank and just tone that down as well, so there's no inclination that, oh, maybe they just pulled the top 22 or something like that. It'll be, here's a summary. We'll probably just boil it down to registrar summary by country. And, here they are divided out. Here's United States, here's Europe, and here's Asia Pac, and here's the R1s, R1 through R22.
Okay. No issues there.
Just to chime in the fan club, this is fabulous work.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you, Mikey. All right, so I've got several kind of to-dos to boil this down a little bit more and come up with a sanitized version to share with the larger group. And I guess along with that, I'll put another action item down of creating like a small how to read these this picture kind of summarization, and that when this is shared with the wider group, that way we have a couple of talking points to explain to the group about what they're seeing.
This is Mikey. This is a question for Marika or Gisela. Are we doing a transcript of this call? Because that might be a pretty useful starting point.
The call is being recorded, but not transcribed.
Okay, never mind.
Okay, short of just hanging out on the call and talking about much else to do, that's really all I had for today's session. Is there any other topics that we need to talk about, or should we... Mike Rodenbaugh, you had mentioned about packaging up, some possible options. But I think you had mentioned that is something that should be deliberated in the overall working group, or is that something that we should come up with as the subteam?
I think we should come up with a few possible next steps. Or if we all agree that there's only one, that's fine, too. I just think that amongst us who've been focused on this, we should think about it and think about what we want to bring back to the group rather than just giving a data dump.
Okay.
So I haven't really reflected a whole lot on that. I mean, I think that, from my perspective, I've always felt that there needs to be more uniformity in the registration agreements with respect to abuse. I think it's just, there's no reason for it to be so disparate. So, my view is that we should work towards creating a sort of consensus policy that is essentially a minimum registration abuse policy that every registrar must enact, just like they've enacted the EDRP. And, of course, they're always free to do more, but they can't do less. I don't know if anybody else on the call has other options as to what we do with this information and possible next steps.
This is James.
Please, James.
And one of the earlier topics we had, Mike, was just this kind of, and it's probably a discussion for the larger group, is if we can phrase it in the terms of what are the advantages and disadvantages of uniformity in the abstract. Does it apply across all jurisdictions? Does it apply for registrars who, for example, are not servicing retail clients but are just servicing resellers, or whether they're servicing corporate clients, you know, like or intellectual property holders or something? So, you know, we're just trying to determine. Yes, and I think Mikey O'Connor has raised the point that there should be a, you know, kind of a minimum baseline that you're free to exceed that, but this, you know, some most common denominator has to be included in the agreements. But then my concern was, you know, do we see the folks that are exceeding it now start to hide behind those minimum requirements? So, you know, I think maybe these are conversations we can introduce to the larger group.
This is Mikey. I kind of like the idea of the word advantages, what James just... So I kind of like to glue together what Mike said and what James said. And it seems to me that it would be useful for me to describe the advantages...
Sorry, I almost got hit by a car there. Apologize for the noise.
Hey, who was that?
Drag racer.
James, I tell you, you're a one-man safety catastrophe.
Sorry for the interruption.
Are you outside or what?
I'm walking back to the office now. So
I see. Okay. I'll try not to die on this call. Okay. Boy, the poor... we aren't being transcribed. That's good. It seems to me that it's always useful to sort of describe what's in it for me to the people who are affected. What are the advantages and disadvantages to registrants, I think is where Mike Rodenbaugh was headed. But I think that there's also a need to describe advantages and disadvantages for registrars. And that to the extent that we could brainstorm up some of that in this smaller group, that might... go a long way to...
Sure, I think that's a great direction to go. I mean, the obvious benefit to me is that it creates a level playing field amongst the registrars, whereas today you've got some black hats, you got some gray hats, you got some white hats, some with policies, some without policies, some enforce their policies, some don't. At least if they all have a consistent policy, then it's up to ICANN to enforce the policies consistently. But whereas today there isn't a consistent policy nor a requirement for such a consistent policy, it just creates an uneven playing field amongst the registrars.
Yeah, and my position would be that, you know, we would want to have, and we wouldn't want to get into a situation where we wanted to take action against an abusive domain and found that we were constrained in some way by... either by our own policies or by something that was required of us externally. So
absolutely, but also another bad thing is where you terminate a customer for abuse and then they go and sign up with another registrar and do the same thing. This is
right.
Something that happened to me at Yahoo many, many times with our keyword policies. We saw it over and over again. We cut somebody off for violating our policy and they're up on Google with cyber squatting websites 5 minutes later.
Right.
Well, finally,
right.
Google got pressured to change their policies and bring them more in line.
No, you're absolutely right. And then we also don't want the situation where, you know, we terminate someone for abuse and, you know, they can go and find some other obscure definition that says what they were doing wasn't abusive and now they're holding us liable for, you know, what they're considering an invalid suspension. So where, you know, where when we are given some discretion, we can point to different documents, whether it's the Universal Terms of Service or a hosting agreement or some other document outside of our registration agreement, and say, no, we're shutting you off because of this or because of that, you know, the other things you agreed to.
I mean, again, I think there's lots of benefits to consistency. If anybody's got an idea as to the downside, let's hear it. Otherwise, we can put it out to the group.
This is Mikey. I'm going to chime in sort of remembering some of the conversations that we had about this past, not necessarily advancing these on my own, but James touched on one, and that's the taking everybody to the lowest common denominator and either distancing or actually prohibiting a registrar who wanted to go beyond those minimums. So I think we need to be careful that we don't.
That, absolutely. I mean, just make it very clear. It's a minimum requirement.
Yeah, and frame it in such a way that registrars who want to go beyond that aren't penalized.
Absolutely.
Either in business practice or in law. I mean,
yeah, something to the effect of, you know, registrars must include, you know, these types of things in their registration agreements, but are not limited to or constrained by, you know, other actions that they can take.
And that's the way it is today, right? Any registrar can terminate any registrant for any reason at any time. Nobody's forced to do business with anybody.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
I'm
not sure that
it's
quite
that. I mean, and Mike, you know better than I do that anybody can sue anybody for any reason at any time.
Dude, look,
you know,
James, look at GoDaddy's toss.
What the heck?
Look at your toss. Of course you can terminate from, yes, you can. You can terminate somebody for any reason at any time.
Oh, right. No, I understand. I'm just saying that, you know, and you want to have a leg to stand on in your existing agreement, you know, portfolio that the affected registrant agreed to or checked the box or signed or whatever, so that if they do come back on you, you know, you have a leg to stand on.
Yeah, and I think that actually falls into the advantage to registrars column in a way.
Right, yeah, this is Barry. So I have a newbie question here, and this is something that I've taken out of, you know, kind of going through this research is, you know, we've so far within the overall working group, the spam is potentially considerable as a registration abuse type, even though I don't think that it is. It's really more a use type. But irregardless, spam is probably, I'm not going to say this with 100% confidence, but spam is probably one of the first types of abuses out there on the Internet. It's probably not the first one, but it's up there in the top five, for instance. So since we've identified it all the way to what we see now, and that practically every registrant agreement out there has some sort of provision about spam, it doesn't do anything. Seeing this language out there, spam is still an incredibly huge issue. So my first question is from a registrant's perspective, what difference does it make whether an abuse is in that agreement or not? Because it sounds like there to me that there's probably a lot more advantages to the registrar for having these provisions in their agreements, because if they do yank the rug out from under the, or I'm sorry, if they just choose to terminate business with that customer, you know, then they're protected by, you know, these provisions if the customer decides to come back at them. So it even if we put in a, and I agree with you, Mike Rodenbaugh, that I love consistency and that it should be everywhere, but, you know, hypothetically, I guess my second question is, let's say we create this minimum baseline and every registrar under the sun jumps on board and has this minimum baseline in their contracts, where does that get us? Is
well,
it
Barry,
only
you know, I like to think of it as, you know, a very large condominium building, you know, where a lot of the tenants are spraying for cockroaches, but that doesn't make cockroaches extinct. You know, there's always going to be cockroaches, and they're always going to, you know, the idea is that you take care of your, you know, area. You try to make it friendly for customers, for visitors, for guests, for inhabitants, whatever your goal is. But you can't, you know, but you recognize the limitation that you can only drive them to the person who isn't spraying or who, you know, leaves pizza boxes out on their front porch or whatever, you know, the analogy, wherever the analogy takes us. But
But the idea being that you're right. I mean, spam has been with us since just about the, almost as long as email. Probably never going to go away. But, you know, if we detect it at GoDaddy, we want to make sure that we have a sufficient recourse to shut it off. And we hope that that gives us a goodwill within the industry and with guys like Mike. And we hope that that also makes us more attractive to customers when they're making a decision of which credit card to use.
All right, thank you for that.
And I think that's another sort of layer of the advantage column. I think that what would be neat is to sort of summarize this last little piece of conversation and to sort of make a what's in it for me list. For
yep.
Sorry,
Mark, please. But I agree with you, Mike. And I guess we haven't heard any disadvantages either, other than what Mike mentioned, that, you know, you don't want people thinking that we bring everybody to the lowest common denominator. That's the one potential disadvantage, but I just think it's very easily remedied.
Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah, just a theoretical disadvantage would be, you know, just some possible exposure to liability either through action or inaction based on the minimum standards. And I haven't thought that all the way through. It's not a fully baked idea, but I just wanted to put that out there as a possible disadvantage.
Wait, I'm sorry, can you explain that again?
You know, just the possibility that it could expose registrars to liability if it's coming from ICANN or from an external body that's viewed by some to be a regulator of the domain name industry, that, you know, if a registrant feels like, you know, they should not have been terminated because they only sent 999,000 unsolicited emails and it's a million to trigger spam according to ICANN's definition, but, you know, therefore they were, wrongly terminated or something like that. And I'm not saying that there's any legitimacy to that claim. I'm just saying that it could just result in a potential disadvantage of new burdens on registrars. That's all.
Okay. I mean, obviously that's not the intent. I don't really see how that would work in practice. I don't see how that's been the case with the EDRP, for example, in 10 years.
No, but we have to assume that, you know, somebody who's setting out to abuse, the Internet and abuse domain name practices, knows these rules and will know this minimum set of requirements just as well as any registrar, possibly better than some. So, and they will know, you know, how to navigate those things without necessarily tripping those minimums. So, you know, I just want to make sure we're not removing discretion or creating new burdens of obligation or liability for registrars.
Okay. I think we're
setting a minimum baseline is fine. I have no problem with that, as long as other people aren't hiding behind the minimum, that's all.
Pretty cool. Barry, so basically right now I think I've listed two possibilities or two possible outcomes of this. The first one, which is you have to throw it in, is the status quo and we do nothing. The second option is that there is a requirement for more uniformity in contracts with respect to abuse, and that via consensus policy we create some sort of minimum abuse baseline or guidelines. Is there any other options that we should put out there when we kind of package this up together?
This is Mikey. I think that there's probably a middle zone that's halfway between nothing and required that's stated as a best practice or, some sort of standard that the registrar voluntarily signs up for and then gets a sticker on their website that says we conform to the blah. So there'd be a middle between those two.
And for my education, is it the EGDP? Is that kind of... Was that a consensus policy, or was that just a best practice?
The expired names deletion policy? Expired domain deletion policy?
Yeah.
I believe that's consensus policy.
Okay, all right, thank you. Is there an example?
I don't think to date that ICANN has ever recommended any sort of best practices or SEAL program. It's been discussed in a couple of different instances, but it's never been adopted to date.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
What's that, the EDDP?
No. Any sort of best practice
recommendation. Okay. Scared me for a minute.
Either Ben, consensus policy or nothing.
Yeah. It seems like we have kind of a,
And I guess the reason I throw it out there is just...
I'm not saying it's not an option. It certainly is. It just
allows people a little bit more sort of policy-making flexibility if we give them, like, three choices.
Careful there. Then it's also non-binding, and there's nothing for ICANN to enforce.
Yeah, and actually that might be appealing.
True. It certainly is appealing to some people.
Well, it might even be
including probably ICANN, but
yeah.
Well, I think best practices. They have to make. When you get into policy, it has to be something that ICANN actually has a purview around. I don't know. I'm going to leave it at that.
All right, I got to run, gents. This has been a very good call, though.
Yeah, I agree. We can go ahead and wrap this up. What I'll do is, like I said, I got several to-do items to sanitize the research. I'll put together a PowerPoint that talks about how they can read the research and then summarize with possible outcomes or results of this. And I'll also kind of pull out the bullet points of a lot of the topics or items that we just talked about to include those in there as well.
You are the man, Barry.
That's great, Barry.
Awesome.
Thanks, Barry.
Great call. Appreciate everybody attending, and you'll see some stuff in the next couple of days, and I'll try to get us on for the next working group call.
All right.
Great. Thanks, Barry.
Great. Thank you, everyone. Take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Right on. Bye-bye.
Thank you all. Bye-bye. Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.